CJ, welcome to the show and thank you very much for accepting the invite.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You're most welcome. CJ, as a starter, please let us know who is CJ, what do you do, and why do you do it?
CJ is a curious soul. I'm very curious about a lot of things, which allows me to go into depths in seeking information. I like to seek information about health, wellness, biohacking. A lot of people know me as biohacker. For those of you who don't know what biohacking means, it is the art and science of changing the environment inside you and around you so you can have complete control over your biology, which means that there are so many things in our environment, small little things that we can fix in terms of light, sound, frequency, vibration, supplements, nutrition, all of those things. So that is me.
Wonderful. Now, you mentioned that biohacking is something that we can use to change our, let's say, biology. How is that possible? Like, because like most people usually think that we are how we are born, and maybe changing ourselves is impossible. What do you think of that?
It's true if you believe it. So Henry Ford once had this quote, and he said, "Whether you think you can do it or not, you're both right in both ways." So a lot of the times what happens is if we have a limiting thought saying that we can do something just for a bit, it actually manifests by itself. But what science tells us is that we have two things. A lot of these conversations come around the world of genetics, and people say, "Oh, I have these genes and I can't change it." So 7% of what your genes do is fixed. Okay. So there are people who have certain genes which favor diabetes or hypercholesterolemia or all of these other kind of stuff. But that doesn't mean that they cannot change it. That means that there is a 7% likelihood that your genes are going to go towards those diseases, but you can fix them with lifestyle, stress management, nutrition, biohacking, because about 85% of all of your genes, the way they work, is on epigenetics. Epigenetics is a huge study where the scientists tell us that the environment in which your genes are, which is your body, and the environment that you are on is the planet or your house or the gym or whatever. All of your cells are constantly interacting with the environment. And depending on how the environment is, your cells will turn off or on. This is called epigenetics. So if we put ourselves in the right environment, and when I say the environment, yeah, your house can be an environment, your workplace can be an environment, your car can be an environment, but you have this huge environment within yourselves. How do you look at the world? How do you perceive information from the world? What are your thoughts about people around you? What kind of smell are you around? What kind of toxicity or not toxicity or air pollution? All of these things are environment. And if we break everything down, environment, nutrition, your feelings, what kind of clothing do you wear? What kind of perfume do you have? All of these things will have an impact on your biology. So biohacking is just taking that piece by piece and fixing one or two things. You don't have to fix a lot of things, but one or two things, and you will see that your genes or your cells, they start reacting differently. And if 85% of the time they react differently, you're going to notice a difference in your life.
Wonderful. Man, like from what I got from you, it feels as if we're like a living organism and we interact with everything around us. And accordingly, we either thrive or go down the slope. Something that crossed my mind now. Now, like looking at the people back then in the past, let's say in the early 90s, like they seem healthier in a sense. They don't have, let's say, the current day diseases from obesity, hypertension, diabetes, etc. What do you think have happened through this time, from the 90s
The rise
till
of
now?
technology. One simple thing is rise of technology. Before, everything that we had to do, we had to go outside and do it. Robotics has rise, AI has rise, internet has been widely available, mobile phones have increased, and all of these things have allowed us to do things more efficiently, but without using our muscles, our body, going outside. Everything can be done from your laptop. Like, imagine we're in the same city, but we're not together to record this podcast. And a lot of people that will be listening to us might be all over the world. So technology has brought certain kind of comforts into our life. The food industry has massively accelerated. There is now food engineers and food scientists who develop certain products, which triggers different parts of our brain, which means that we get addicted to them. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, there was not a lot of this. There was no food science. It was just like food. If you got to eat, you were lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these things have progressed. Technology has increased. And because of that, we have moved away from what we have always been doing for millions and millions of years, which is going outside, interacting with the environment, you know, getting a bit dirty, like touching the soil, moving things, heavy things around. And because of that, a lot of these diseases start coming. Whether you talk about like cardiovascular disease or diabetes or heart attacks, all of these things are because we are disconnected from our natural environment.
Mm-hmm. Our natural environment. So then how can we, for example, now, as people, let's say, who are surrounded by all this technology, this toxic environment, how can we get away from it and have, let's say, a healthier life? What do you think?
You don't have to get away from it. You just have to limit it. You need to understand it. Our intelligence is amazing. Once we truly understand what a certain thing is doing for us, and if we don't go into the panic mode, so if I tell you like, hey, being next to a laptop is crazy because it shoots out this negative electromagnetic waves, and that's going to lower your testosterone, your fertility, and there are so many studies, you're going to be like, oh my God, it will trigger a stress response. If you can go past the stress response and you can understand on how things work, you can create a distance from these things. You can schedule timings when you're exposed to technology, and you can take some digital breaks so that you can keep your mental health and physical health in check. Just like that, if you know that 90% of us are staying 90% of the times indoors, but being outdoors is great, you might just schedule like an hour walking outside to interact with that environment. If you know that, you know, looking outside and like getting some sun rays is good, maybe instead of going for a smoke break, you go for a walk break and get some sunlight in. Maybe, you know, you wanted to do some sort of a work, head over to the beach, listen to music, do something. As long as you understand what is good for you, your intelligence will find ways. You just have to be motivated and not be scared. So the first thing I tell people is don't be scared, because when emotions rise in our brain, they rise through our brain is a very systematic process. So they go through an emotional center of the brain called the amygdala. Mm-hmm. And this amygdala is a fear response circuitry of the brain. If that thought and emotion doesn't cross the amygdala, then it stays there and you'll be scared. But mm-hmm. if you take a deep breath, if you know that, hey, listen, here's the environment, and you should have like a problem solving mentality. So if you think that, hey, here's a problem, there is a solution, let's go find it out. Then you engage the logical centers of your brain, the most recently evolved ones, the prefrontal cortex. And that is really powerful. It'll give you solutions by yourself, whether it's listening to a podcast like this or reading a book or, you know, even asking ChatGPT on how can I protect myself from radiation. The answers are there. Information is readily available. You just need to make yourself understand what's going wrong so you can get access to it.
I see. Wonderful. CJ, let's say now I'm someone who have like a sedentary lifestyle, and mm-hmm. I plan that, hey, now I have to do something about my life. So I'm going to make a plan. We all know that I have to be more physically active. Let's go to nutrition. What should I eat? What are the things that I should consider? And what role does diet have in my life?
Diet has one of the most important roles because, like we said, the environment and the epigenetic signaling, diet plays on one of the biggest environmental roles, which is the environment in your body. You might have heard of terms like my body is a temple, I need to keep it protected. And it's because anything that you put into your mouth will have a direct influence on how you feel, how you sleep, and how you behave in the world. If you were starting out, the first thing I would tell you as a golden rule of thumb is don't have any processed food, which means that if you can find a food group that naturally is there in the nature and it doesn't come in any packets, you know, for example, going and buying apples in the grocery store versus having like an apple syrup or having bananas versus a banana juice, which is packaged. Anything that comes processed or packaged is probably not good for you. So that would be the first question I would ask myself. Does this really come from nature or is it being tampered with and I've gotten it with some preservatives and additives? And most of the times, the marketing around these things are so clever that you will not know. Sugar, for example, there are 60 different names for sugar. So you might see on a label that is sugar-free, but there are 60 different names that you don't know about. And why I say processed food is because it's the most lowest hanging fruit for you or for anyone. Every time your consumption of processed food increases by 10%, your risk of dying from anything increases by 20%. Whoa. So there's a direct correlation. Yeah, there's a direct correlation on processed food and your health. So I would ask myself to begin with, hey, does Mother Nature give this to us? That means we have had millions of years of memory inside our body, because the way our bodies and genes work is because of a lot of memory. You and me, and the memory is spread all around our bodies, not just in our brain. Every cell, every DNA has much more memory than the brain can process. There are different ways to look at it. There's a scientific way to look at it, and there's the whole ancient science around this as well. But long story short is that your body understands, every cell understands how to process something if it's been there for a very long time. And if, you know, if Kellogg's or something, which has just been there in the last 50 years, your body doesn't know how to process it.
Wonderful. Just like alcohol, for example. Like our bodies until now, they still don't know how to process it. Now.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And with alcohol, you know, alcohol can be considered a macronutrient because you can directly, your cells can use the excess energy from alcohol to burn as fuel. But the problem is that alcohol is made up of a lot of things. One of the things that alcohol breaks down into your liver is acetaldehyde. Mm-hmm. And this is a very toxic compound that can make your liver work like crazy. It can give you a lot of other problems. So it's, our body doesn't know how to use it, but alcohol also comes with a lot of toxic compounds, which most of us don't have the right gut bacteria to detox. Some people do, but most of us don't. So that's why people get much more of a hangover. They get brain fog. And all of these effects of alcohol can be seen in your system for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Most people are not conscious enough to realize it. But if you talk to a peak performer who can operate at 90 or 95% of their capacity every day, mm-hmm. they're going to see the difference. But most people, unfortunately, they're at operating at 50% of their capacity. So something happens and they don't even notice it.
Wonderful. I see your point. Like, for example, like even if it's doing them damage, they cannot know, basically, because they're not operating on their full capacity, in a sense. Mm-hmm.
I always give this example, like, you know, people who have chronic pain. And we have a biohacking facility and we have a lot of people coming with chronic pain. It's really amazing to see. If you have chronic pain for a very long time, you think that's how life is. Mm-hmm. So shoulder pain or back pain, until and unless we put you, us or a doctor or someone else, he shows you what it feels like to not have a chronic pain. You're going to be asking yourself this question. Oh my God, you know, how was I living with this all my life? But all your life, you thought it was normal. So everyone who's out there, they can perform at such a high level. They can have the best of the best emotions. They can be generous. They can be everything that they want to be. But, you know, it takes a lot of these environments and biohacks and all of these things to fix, and then they can do it. But most of the people, they're always running. It's like the pain analogy. They're always in pain, so they think that's the way to live.
Yeah, so they adapted to it. They don't know what's normal anymore.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you go into the mental institution, everyone thinks they're normal, and the only guy who's crazy is the doctor. It's like that.
I see. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, when you have people, because if everyone around you is doing the same thing and complaining about the same issues and not being able to manage their emotions and have a certain attitude when they're stuck in traffic, then you consider that to be normal. But that's not normal.
It becomes a new normal. Like we become like part of the herd, and we don't know how to differentiate anymore.
Exactly. Let me ask, doctor is a crazy one.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor is the crazy one.
Yes, exactly. Maybe he's going to join the group as well after. He's going to become truly crazy. CJ, in your facility, what biohacking techniques do you guys have? Like, how can we, what do you have over there that can help us being better?
So our concept of biohacking is mostly on mental health and frequencies. Frequencies are concepts in nature which can be observed, which cannot be seen. But these are very advanced quantum stuff. So we have, let me give you something that everyone can understand. So we have a full body red light therapy panel, which gives you, for example, a 20-minute session can give you the same effects of sunrise and sunset for 2 weeks. So it's a good time saver, and it helps you build muscle, lose weight, reverses aging. We have a mat called a PEMF mat. And basically, I'm sure you know this, but like a lot of your listeners might have heard of this term called grounding or earthing, which is where you remove your shoes and you be on the beach and you get these negative electrons. So if you lie down on that mat for 30 minutes, you can get 1 month of like going outside and roaming around in the beach. So it's basically, we have technology, just to give people an idea, that take the concepts of nature and supercharge it for today's environment. So you don't have to wait for a month or for 2 weeks to go out there, wake up in the morning, go get the sunrise and get those effects. You can get it in a 20-minute session. We have some brain stimulation devices. We have something called the hyperbaric chamber, where we put you in under a pressurized chamber and we give you oxygen 100%. So your body can absorb it up to 5 times more. We have a hypoxia training machine where we can suck all the oxygen out of the environment. So your lungs expand more and your ability to get more oxygen per red blood cell increases. So then when you're, it's like how UFC fighters used to train back in the day. They used to go on the top of the mountain and then, you know, the oxygen is very low and they're doing all of their camping there for 3 months. And they come back on sea level. And then their ability to extract oxygen is so much that they're able to outperform anyone. But we can do it like while you're having coffee. We have sophisticated equipment. So to give your audience an idea, that's the kind of stuff we do.
Wonderful. You know, something crossed my mind right now. Can we reverse aging by these techniques? Like growing old, like our cells are dying and growing bit by bit. Do you think we can stop this process somehow or slow it down in a sense?
Yeah. Yes, we can slow it down. There are many, and this is longevity is like a buzzword right now. And in my other company called Biohacking, we actually design certain tools with the aim of reversing aging according to science. Of course, all of our products are science-backed. And a lot of people are doing this. You can actually look at your biological age versus chronological age. So chronological age is, let's say I'm 34 right now, and my body should be acting like a 34-year-old. But my biological age is actually 25. So my body really acts like a 25-year-old, and there are multiple tests that have shown to prove this, like the DNA methylation test, telomeres test, just the aging tests in general. So to answer your question, yes, it is possible. But, you know, one thing I want to highlight is the concept of health span versus lifespan. A lot of people can extend their life by sitting in a cryo chamber, fasting a lot, so much so that they don't enjoy anything in the world because their hormone gets screwed up, spending an hour or two in the sauna or the ice bath and doing all of these biohacking techniques. And you can extend lifespan with that. But what people should truly be aiming for is health span, mm-hmm. which means that how, if let's say you're 50 years old, are you comparing yourself, your activity to a normal 50-year-old? Or do you want to have the youthful radiance, glow, athletic performance of a 25-year-old? So that's what health span is. So every time people ask me like, hey, can we just reverse aging? Yeah, sure you can. But like what should be your focus is like improving your health span, because whether you're 50, whether you're 80, you want to feel younger and you want to perform younger. You can look younger on your tests, but trust me, it's like... We've seen so many people who do that, but their joy of life goes away because they restrict themselves too much. They put themselves under extreme stress, and you don't want to do that. You want to be able to sing, laugh, you know, dance, do anything at any point and not get hurt. So that should be the aim.
You know, that's something crossed my mind now. Like, for example, I'm a personal trainer, and via my life, I used to be like, on one end of the extremes, where I need everything to be by the book. However, by the time, this started to be troubling and mentally draining, because you're going to be cut out of life, let's say, in a sense. And I saw that this is like not a way for me to teach people to be like perfection or one of the extremes is not something to always strive for. Like being somewhere in between, flexibility, enjoying life, it's something better for the longevity and the long term. Like you need something which you can live with, in a sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because I've always been on the extreme mindset as well. But as I get more experience and I look around the world, I always think about what my grandma used to say, that CJ, life is in a balance. You should be in a balance always. And, you know, when we look at the ebb and flow of life, things could go to an extreme, but just for a bit. But you always want to bring things, especially in your profession as a personal trainer, you want to make it easier for people. You know, maybe you and me, we're like type A personalities that get the joy, more dopamine when we do harder things and we restrict ourselves. It brings us more joy or more dopamine, basically, in our neural circuits. But for most people, they want to do the most easiest things. Our biology is... The way we have evolved to be a lazy species. Now, I'm sure a lot of people would be like, what the hell is he saying? I'm not lazy, and like a lot of athletes. But if you look at the conservation mechanisms of evolution and how we are designed to save energy in our cells, because energy right now you can switch on your app and order anything to your house, right? Like it's so easy. But back in the day, like for millions of years, that wasn't the case. So any amount of energy that you got, biology designed us this way to save it. So most people, and even now, like if you take 100 people experiment and you ask people like, hey, would you prefer to like run or walk? Mm-hmm. Most people are going to say walk. Then you're going to tell people like, oh, for the next 4 hours, would you like to walk or would you like to sit down? People will choose to sit down, and you give them some Netflix and they will prefer to lie down. So saving energy is inherent in our biology, which makes us lazy. But that also means that we can use these concepts, understand them, and then use them to our advantage.
Mm-hmm. CJ, let me ask you, you mentioned fasting. I think it's a hot topic right now. People have like different, let's say, ideas and perspectives about it. Some people say it's beneficial. Some people say it's the same. Nothing happens. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Again, it depends on who we are talking to, right? So fasting can mean different for different people. They're at different age groups. The level of fasting that should be recommended is different. women have a completely different biological response to fasting than men doesn't mean that they shouldn't do it. It's just that, you know, with men, we hit our adrenal glands and cortisol receptors at like 16, 17 or 18 hours of fast. So it's very easy for us to do it before our body goes under the stress mode. For women, it's about like 12 to 13 hours. Mm-hmm. So women who engage and compare themselves with men, and unfortunately, the reality is most of the fasting studies, about 80% of them have been done on men, not mm-hmm. women. Only recently, we are looking at some data in women. But what happens is if a woman fasts too much and she doesn't have the right genetics and, you know, all of these different factors, she might do herself more harm. Mm-hmm. Is fasting good generally? It's one of the best things you can do for yourself, because when we look at one end of the extreme, which is fasting, and the other end of the extreme, which is always mm-hmm. eating is going to do you so much bad. Now, there are different terminologies when it comes to fasting as well. One is called time-restricted eating. Mm-hmm. This, I think, is the most beneficial for most people. And this is where you eat all of your meals in a certain time frame. For some people, it's 8 hours. For some people, it's 6 hours. For some people, it's 4 hours. But basically, you give for the rest of the time, you give your body a break. And that's what nature intends us to do. Nature doesn't intend us to constantly be grazing, because every time you eat something, your liver, your pancreas, your kidneys, all of these things are working. Mm-hmm. And you don't want them to work all the time. You want to give them a break. And break doesn't mean like just in the night. The more you give them a break, the more you give your body a chance to recover and regenerate. So fasting as a concept, when I traveled the world and I met a lot of ancient cultures, fasting there is a norm. Like people don't eat all the time mm-hmm. because they even, you know, going back to Greek philosophy, like Socrates, he said, all the diseases of the human body begin in the gut.
Uh-huh.
And if you're constantly feeding, you're not giving your gut the right time to recover. And unfortunately, most of the people today, they're feeding themselves with the wrong kind of food, mm-hmm. which leads them into leaky gut. And this causes even more harm. They have gut dysbiosis, means the bacteria, which is in the gut is, let's call it like bad bacteria instead mm-hmm. of good bacteria because of all the modern food. So when you take a break from eating, your bacteria, your gut, the mucosal lining, all of these different components get a chance to revive. And when mm-hmm. they revive, they're much more stronger. For most people, I always recommend if you're a man, at least don't fall under the cliche. And I know a lot of people have different views on this. Here's mine. I'm not saying this is right, but here's what I would do.
Yeah.
Have a max of 2 to 3 meals per day. Mm-hmm. If you're above 30, 2 is good enough. Don't have a lot of snacks, just 2 good meals. If you're more active, then you can have about 3 meals mm-hmm. and have them between a 6 to 8 hour window. Mm-hmm. For women, similar thing, but you can have your window can be wider because mm-hmm. women sociologically have a lot of more stress than men. They have other factors like kids, they have menstrual cycles. There are other stressors that happen to a woman's body, which a lot of people don't take under consideration. So for women, 12 hours of fasting is good to start off with.
I see. Thank you very much for that, CJ. While you were talking, welcome. I remembered the insulin resistance. What do you think mm-hmm. of sugar and its effects on our bodies?
So sugar, think of it this way. One of the leading causes for any kind of disturbances in your body in recent times has been linked to sugar, which means that you mentioned a term called insulin resistance. This is for people who are listening. Every time we eat something, even if it's a protein rich food, a fat rich food, whatever, your cells have to absorb that nutrition. Mm-hmm. And insulin is a carrier. It basically shuttles nutrients to your cells. Mm-hmm. When you have a lot of sugar, your insulin spikes quite a lot, much more than when it spikes when it's protein or fat. Now, when this insulin constantly spikes, its ability over a long period of time to deliver the same nutrients into your cells gets lower. So you get resistant to insulin. This leads on to diabetes and all of that stuff. But whenever you have sugar, if you, let's say it's like plain sugar, you're going to get more fat. You're going to accumulate visceral fat. Visceral fat is the bad kind of fat that you don't want around your body, especially your organs. That will trigger a lot of cardiovascular incidents, diabetic incidents, brain fog. It can increase parasite and candida overgrowth. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who have high sugar diets or foods that have a lot of sugar can get cancer in the future because cancer cells also love to survive on sugar. One of the ways, actually, it's called the Warburg effect, on how you can mitigate a lot of these cancerous cells is by depriving them of carbohydrates or sugar, because in order to grow, they need sugar. So when you deprive themselves, you go on like an extreme ketogenic diet, then those cancer cells don't get enough fuel.
I see.
So they stop growing. And also, so the Warburg effect, if anyone who's interested, they can look at it. Reducing sugar makes your brain sharp, makes you lose weight, makes even brain fog. This is something which is very underrated. A lot of people feel brain fog for the next 3 to 4 days after consuming a lot of sugar. And once you consume one sugary meal, in fact, over a period of time, your chances of getting Alzheimer's also increases, which is a neurodegenerative disease. And this is because Alzheimer's is nothing but type 3 diabetes in the brain. When insulin resistant in your body goes to your brain and your brain is not able to kind of catch on to that sugar, you get Alzheimer's. And we all know that Alzheimer's is one of the most, one of the worst things that are happening in this modern age to us. Loss of memory, loss of motor control, risk of dying, all of these things increase. So I think sugar is one thing that you should avoid as much as you can. There are circumstances, however, that you might need a quick boost of sugar. These are for the bodybuilders, for all the athletic people, because they deplete so much of carbohydrates while in a training session or a competition session that for a minor period of time, just to quickly increase those carbohydrate reserves is good. Like triathletes, basically they have like a sugary gel which they're sipping on throughout the day while they're training.
Yeah.
So it's all depends on context, but overall, as a general idea, if you can avoid sugar, it will enhance your life in every way. Your sexual function, your brain function, your cardiovascular function, your weight, your mood also.
Let me just summarize what you just said and tell me if I'm correct or not. So in order for us, let's say, to have a better insulin resistance, a healthier environment in our bodies from the inside, we need to control our sugar consumption throughout the day. And let's say use sugars and carb sources as only an energy source. For example, if we're training intensely around our training window and throughout the day, we focus on high protein, high fats diet. Am I correct?
Yes, correct.
Wonderful.
You nailed it.
Let me
and
ask
also,
you.
Also, if you see... If you see in nature, right? So we want to observe a lot of these mechanisms that are active in nature. For about 8 months out of a year, most places on Earth will not have a sugar source. And for you to kind of like go out there and like, if example, we were like hunter gatherers or something, it would take us so much more time to find like a bee's nest or to find like blueberries or something, some kind of sweet. It takes a lot more effort to find sweet. And that's what we want to translate in the real world today as well. If you are putting in a lot of effort, then having a little bit of sugar. And when we talk about sugar, unprocessed raw, kind of like raw honey, some bananas, you know, some kind of like agave or something that is as close to nature as possible. And you get bonus points if whatever you're consuming has some functional benefits, like honey is good for the throat, is good for the immune system, it's got a lot of polyphenols. So I'm saying if it's coming from nature and looking at our first rule of thumb, that avoid processed food as much as you can. If you're getting it from nature, even if it has a little bit of carbs, it's fine.
Yeah. You know, like I usually tell people, don't worry about food as much if you're eating, let's say, natural sources. Try not to stress about it. If you're eating, let's say, things which you can find out in nature, don't think so much about the quantity, because your cells mm-hmm. are going to be full automatically and you wouldn't feel hungry because they are, let's say, nutrient rich now. And for example, I give them an example where, for example, the reason why you're always hungry if you eat fast food is because your cells are nutrient deprived. So you think that if you eat more, you're going to feel satiated. However, you're not feeding your cells. And that's why you keep on eating and get fatter and fatter.
Correct. I 100% agree. Also, the, let's say, junk food, right? The junk food industry spends about $12 billion a year. Mm-hmm. You just look at what kind of combinations and what kind of chemicals make your brain light up.
Oh.
Another thing, yes. So if you're going to fight against junk food with your willpower, it's a very finite resource and they're spending $12 billion to get your attention, to get your brain cells. So it will never, ever be that you can take one bite of that burger, some French fries and leave it. You're better off not ordering them at all, because once it's there in your field of vision or once you've tried it, these guys are, just think about this number. Yeah. They're spending $12 billion for you to try it. So
they
have some of the most smartest people. Exactly. They're some of the most smartest people working for them. And if you see, so here's a concept, right, that they work with. When we look at nature, right, you either have something which is sweet, which is a carbohydrate, let's say a banana, or you have like a meat, which is like a protein, or you have some nuts, which are fat. Mm-hmm. Never, ever, or like, you will find these two macronutrients together. One is high starch, high carb, and high fat. In nature, it doesn't really exist. But because these are the two sources, so what carbs does, it gives you energy. And what fat does is actually it gives you more energy if you know how to burn them. Every time you eat these two groups together, your brain lights up, and then they add the salt and all those things, but your brain lights up and it's basically like cocaine for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to want to get it because even when we know that all this food is around us, our brain still works on this. We have this monkey brain that says, oh, it's going to be the end of the world. Let me eat as much as I can, because this kind of food combination, I will hardly get it. And you see all the fat food, burgers, pasta, whatever you kind of like see, it'll always be a combination of fat and mm-hmm. carbohydrates. That's what triggers your brain.
Very true, very true. CJ, let me ask you, what's the role of sleeping in our life? Like, because it's something that we do basically 30% of our life we spend doing.
Mm-hmm.
What is important?
Yeah, 1/3 of your life is sleeping. I think, before we have any health conversation, right? A lot of people think that sleep is a pillar of health. I would argue that sleep is the base foundation on which all health pillars are made. Matthew Walker says sleep is the bridge between hope and despair. And if you're not sleeping enough, you're walking reverse on that bridge. So you're going to be more in disparity instead of hope and joy, because all the systems in our body, like I said, like our liver, our hormones, they have been designed to regenerate when they're sleeping. Your brain has this thing called the glymphatic drainage system, which is basically, think of like if you were staying in a one-bedroom apartment and you're staying there for like a few days and we just stop you taking the trash out.
Mm-hmm.
Your apartment is going to stink. You're not going to want to be there. Even if you're a really smart and bright person, with all this trash all the time, you're going to have problems, right? Your brain is the same. So the way your brain kind of like gets rid of this trash is that your brain cells actually shrink by 60%.
Oh.
And there is a fluid called the cerebral spinal fluid. It moves throughout your brain, and its basic job is to remove all this trash out. It only happens in the night. A lot of positive hormones that a lot of people know, like IGF-1, growth hormone, testosterone, estrogen, all the hormones that we need for ourselves to be like the best version of ourselves happen when you're sleeping. There's a lot of memory consolidation, memory processing, all of these things, anything that you've learned in the day, it goes into deep centers of your brain while you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. You actually lose weight, not in the day, but while you're sleeping.
Oh.
Your body makes these fat burning hormones. Yeah. The best way for anyone to put on weight is ask them not to sleep. Because what also happens is your cells, let's go back to the concept, like you said, your cells don't have enough nutrients, right? When your cells don't have enough sleep, no matter how many nutrients you fill in, it's still going to be hungry. We have a 40% more likelihood of choosing much more sugar and carbs in every meal when we have 1 hour of bad sleep. And I always tell people that the best diet for you is 1 extra hour of sleep per night. Sleep is like the cornerstone of what everyone should focus on. And it's really simple. A lot of people, so with our other company, Biohacken, we have a circadian division, and we look a lot into sleep science. So some simple things that you can do starting today is don't watch a lot of TV or don't spend time on your phones at least 2 hours before sleeping, because your phone or your laptop or anything, it switches on blue light.
Mm-hmm.
And blue light messes up your brain circuits. Sleep in a cold room, sleep in a dark room, sleep while you don't have any stress. So don't sleep when you're angry. If you're angry with someone, try to sort it out. Mm-hmm. And if your audience wants, like, you know, if you're okay with it, I created a series of sleep videos. It's like a 1 month course. And I'm happy to just give it out for free for people. We'll have it active maybe in a few weeks. So I'm happy to give it out to you, and you can check it out, and you know, you can share it with people.
Thank you so much, man. Like, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people out there like can benefit from this, because like sleeping is like the basic pillar. And like, usually, for example, when I talk to people, they tell me, how can we lose weight? How can we gain muscles, etc.? My first question is, how's your sleep? If you don't sleep well, that's it. Like, we have to start with this. It's a basic thing. Is it about the number of hours or the quality?
I would say people in the beginning, it's always good to look at the number of hours.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because when we speak about quality, it's actually about quality, but most people don't have a way to assess the quality. A lot of people think that they slept well, but when we look, we put a Whoop or an Oura Ring or some other monitor on them, they sleep like shit. They just don't know it. Because when we're sleeping, even if we wake up 5, 6, 7 times, most people wake up 4 times per hour. Like, these are the general stats. And most people don't even remember waking up, but most people will wake up around 3 to 4 times per hour. So in order to track it, there are devices, there are other techniques, but most people won't do it. So for me, what I like to tell people is focus on the hours first, because if you have enough hours, then chances are your quality will also increase over a period of time. Because if you can't sleep for 8 hours and you're just sleeping for like 5 or 6, and you focus on sleeping for 8, at least those 3 hours will bring some quality into your life. Yeah, but at a more advanced stage, when people are looking at, you know, they have some devices, they have some biofeedback, some data, then they can look at certain metrics like non-REM sleep, REM sleep, deep sleep. These are different stages of our sleep. Every night when we sleep, we have about 5, depending on how long you sleep, we have 5 to 6 different cycles of 90 minutes where our body moves through different stages of sleep. It starts with light, then it goes to deep, then goes to non-REM, and then REM, and then back. So quality is important.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know how to assess it first. For most people, if you can get an hour and a half of REM sleep and an hour and a half of deep sleep, it's a good starting point. It's a very good starting point. Most people don't even get it. Deep sleep is mostly associated with your testosterone, with all of the anabolic hormones that are happening in the body. REM sleep, which happens later in the sleep cycle, it helps with a lot of these memory consolidation, verbal recall, fluency, brain fog, all of that stuff. In fact, on YouTube recently, I broke down Andrew Huberman, who's a professor at Stanford. Yeah. His entire, there was a podcast for about 2.5 or 3 hours, and I broke it down into 15 minutes with actionable steps. So we can put that in the show notes.
Sure.
Look at it. It gives a lot of information. But yeah, quality is important. But a lot of people don't know how to kind of understand it. If you can understand it, then it's great.
Wonderful. CJ, like, I love so much what you're doing, what you're trying to do and help the community that we are in, let's say. Because actually, like, when you think about it, there are obvious things. Eating well, training, being out in nature. But for some reason, people just don't do it. And they always need people to emphasize on how important it is. I think like the more people hear from different individuals about how important this is, and this is the secret, this is the magical pill that everyone is looking for, maybe bit by bit, we will build like a better society, better community, a healthier one, which I think is going to be a happier one. Because I usually tell people, if you are depressed, try physical activities before trying any medication. And it's the one thing that have proven to increase your happiness span, let's say, without negative side effects. So I want to thank you for your work. Do you have any final notes, CJ, for the audience? Any advices from your side?
No, nothing. Thank you so much for having me. I was super excited, and it's, you know, we've had a great time. Would love to meet you in person, and thank you for all the work you're doing, spreading this knowledge, interviewing people. And I agree, yes, on your last thing, I know that mental health issues are increasing quite a lot.
True.
And in 2040, they say that 1 in 4 people will have a mental health issue.
That's huge.
Which is scary to me. Yeah, I think it's going to be, all the experts that I've been talking to, all the scientists, they're telling me it's already there. It doesn't have, you don't have to wait till 2040, 2030, you'll already see it, which means that if you, me, and 2 other people in this are in this room, one of us will have a mental health disorder. And one of the ways we can prevent it. Yeah. And one of the ways, you're right. If you exercise 5,649 steps per day, and your likelihood of getting depression is close to 0%, 5,649 steps. You don't have to go to a gym. You don't have to take a nutrition pill. You don't have to do anything. Go outside, walk for a bit. It helps. Exercise is much more beneficial for any mental health disorders, more than like antidepressants like Prozac and Zoloft. This has been proved. So you're correct. I would encourage people also to, one of the things that is very underrated is how your internal environment is.
Mm-hmm.
So be more kind, be more grateful, look at the world in a hopeful manner. And trust me, this is also as powerful as exercise. A lot of people don't know this, but how you see the world gives, and how you're kind of perceiving the world, these are microseconds of impressions that your cells are getting. And every time your cells know that the world is great, you're having fun, life is good, there's more excitement, curiosity, love, it wants to extend its lifespan. But every time you are sad, you think that you're around crappy people, things are not going good for you, that's the time your cells get the message that, you know, there's not much excitement left in the world. So they will start lowering their function. So biohacking, all of these things are good. It's great. You can, you know, go out there, purchase a lot of devices, do a lot of cool stuff. But it all starts with your internal chemistry. And the only way you can change it is by having a good perspective about the world. That's what I wanted to say.
Wonderful. CJ, thank you so much for being a wonderful human. I wish you nothing but happiness for you, and your family. And I wish to meet you in person.
And same here. Let me know when you're here in Dubai. Let's catch up. Yeah, okay. Bye-bye. Thank you for having me. Take care of yourself. Bye.